Okay, so let me get this straight, Matt. You spent $800 on a clear quartz crystal from Etsy, and sleeping next to that made your back feel better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually the constant radiation that flowed from it. Yeah, and it cured...
Healing radiation, right?
Healing radiation. There's people that sell that stuff on, I don't know if they're doing it on purpose maliciously.
I just looked it up, Matt. I literally looked it up before we started the podcast. And I'm looking at a website right now that's says the science behind crystals.
Nice.
Which, I mean, just in that statement alone, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. And then it goes over clear quartz is considered a master healer. And believed to support the entire energetic system.
Wow.
How is your energetic system, by the way, Matt?
Poor, apparently, because I don't have one of those.
Yeah, you need to buy biggest clear quartz you can find. I found one on Etsy for $819.
I mean, that's not that bad. I mean, if your entire system is now healed, you're good, right?
That's true. If it could heal everything, I mean, yeah, $800 ain't too bad if it cures all ailments.
There's one YouTuber who went around and he was buying certain like healing items that you'd find on these websites, right? And one of them was literally full of radiation. So you put that sucker next to your bed on your pillow and it's just irradiating you all night.
Well, he probably felt different. He's like, I feel different. I don't know if it's a good different or a bad different. I have this little Quado guy growing out of my tummy now. But other than that...
It's wild what people will try selling you online.
Yeah, I don't know how the whole crystal, the healing crystal thing began. That would be an interesting to look into. But it's probably adjacent to astrology, right? You know, the moon has got to be in a proper alignment. And then you got to point your crystal at the moon and... And you get all that moon energy, baby, coming into your bedroom.
It reminds me. Nice. Yes, exactly. You got it. You've nailed it.
Well, I'm glad the crystals have been working for your back, man. Mm-hmm. That's good to hear. You know, we all felt bad for you last week. We saw you going through the pain. Fingers crossed the crystal work. You might want to get like an amethyst as well. I've been reading that those can help too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or maybe some ibuprofen.
Yeah. Maybe if you want to put toxins into your body.
Yeah.
As opposed to the pure healing energy of crystals.
Of crystals.
Welcome to the Level With Me podcast, everybody. Thank you for dropping by. This is a mostly gaming podcast with a little bit of life, love, loss discussion on the side. It's been an interesting week. If you guys want to support us, you can join our Patreon for a small fee. You can come and join our live streams, which we've got a couple of people in the chat here. And after the podcast, we have a nice little sit-down discussion with the people in chat. We talk about the way we really feel about the world and interesting topics, you know, things off topic, things on topic, things that maybe we don't want to say on YouTube, you know, if you want to have that conversation, come join us on Patreon. We appreciate y'all. And it's been a tumultuous week. I like that word, tumultuous.
That's wow. You got quite the lexicon on you.
I've learned a few things in my nearly 40 years on this planet.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Thank you. Embracer Group. You hear about them?
Yes, I have. Yep.
Yeah. So basically, one of the biggest game publishers in the world. They own like so many board games as well. It's not just video games. They're huge. They own like 200 IPs in video games, like 300 IPs in board games. It's crazy.
Wow.
And I think a bunch of other stuff. They just split into three companies. So we've sort of gotten hints that this was coming. I think they sold off Gearbox recently. Or something along those lines. Some IPs were being bought, and they were clearly trying to get their balance sheet back into the green. So they've been making deals left, right, and center. A huge deal fell through, and I think that's what sort of forced them into this weird split. So It's now like a board game company and a video game company and something else. I forget how they divvied up everything. They're still massive, massive company. Even as a three-way split, the companies are still could still rival any publisher in the industry. It's pretty wild. But yeah. This is one of the bigger shakeups within...
It's pretty insane that they just went around and started buying all these gaming companies and then we're like, well, something went wrong and now you guys are all getting no funding and you're going to have to shut down. It's like, wow.
That
was short-sighted and didn't last even like a year, it feels like.
Well, I mean, they've been around for a long time, but yeah, the crazy buy-up phase.
The recent buy phase where mm-hmm. they're picking up all sorts of, like Insurgency was one of them.
They basically screwed up from the COVID bubble. They were like, woohoo, yeah. And they went crazy and a bit too crazy because not only have they been firing off teams of people in droves from all their companies, but now they're just like, whoops, we screwed that one up big time and we have to like... turn into three companies now. For anyone who's not familiar with Embracer Group, they own basically the distributing rights to all Lord of the Rings games.
What?
I don't know if it's permanently, but maybe. They have Tomb Raider, Saints Row, Dead Island, the Metro series, Homeworld, Borderlands, Deus Ex, Duke Nukem. Like, it's just the tip of the iceberg. They own tons of stuff. So
at first I was like, Deuces X? Like, whoa.
Deuces X.
I don't remember that game.
I was like, Deus, is that what is it? It's Latin, right? Or is it Russian?
I don't know
what it is, man. But yeah, a lot. So them breaking up, it'll be interesting to see what happens because for a long time we've been seeing the big companies just gobble up all the little companies and the big companies become bigger and bigger and bigger, and then they have these mega Ubisoft, Microsoft, Electronic Arts corporations that can just kind of dictate the gaming world to a degree. I mean, not completely, but watching Embracer Group split up like this makes me wonder if maybe there's more of that in the future for some of these other big companies.
I don't want the gaming industry to become volatile where it feels like it needs to do that. But at the same time, I don't think having all of our games under giant umbrellas of, you know, certain... you know, conglomerates is probably the best thing for consumers in the long run.
Yeah, no, monopolies are not great. And it's not good. I mean, I don't know. Look at what Call of Duty's doing. Have you seen their latest dinosaur DLC?
I literally just saw the link for it that you posted and it is beautiful.
It's pretty cool, huh?
At first I thought, I was like, is this like a Call of Duty video? No, it's just a skin.
Cod beat Battlefield to dinosaurs, man. But they did it in a way nobody was expecting. They let you play the dinosaur, but it's just a person. It looks, I mean, somebody spent a lot of time on that skin.
It's a person with a dino head is what it is.
Yeah. I think you have dino hands too or something.
Okay.
But
well, yeah.
have you seen their... the crazy, what are they, the legendary skin things that they're doing for the guns? Have you seen that?
No, I haven't really been paying too super close attention to COD.
Man, they're getting really insane with their skins. Like this Velociraptor skin is pretty crazy, but their weapon skins, I forgot what they're called, the like elite legacy edition skins. I don't know what they are.
Mythical, legendary, awesome skin. Yeah,
exactly. You inspect them and there's like a little battle happening on the gun. There's like little people fighting on the gun.
That's neat.
There's a COD game on the gun. You're like watching COD World War II on your gun while you're playing Warzone. It's CODception, man. It's crazy.
Cool. Yeah. It's legitimately cool. I think it all stemmed from the success, a crazy success of Valorant's skin game. They have some incredible skins.
I am not caught up on Valorant skins.
Well, I am not either anymore, but I'm assuming you've seen the dragon one, right?
Maybe.
So it's a dragon and it...
For
and
your
it,
like, gun it, or for your character?
For your weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like it will, when it like reloads, it will grab the magazine and like shove it into itself. It'll like... It's amazing. It's like $100.
Shove it into itself, Matt.
Well, because it's a magazine. It's got to put the magazine back into itself. Okay, I realized what that sounded like.
You're leading to something weird here. I don't know.
It's not weird.
What kind of dragon stuff is going on in this game?
There's no dragons. weirdness here. Just go with it. Level cap. Okay.
Okay.
But it was like $100 when it came out, I think.
Yeah.
Very, very expensive. But if you are playing Valorant all the time and like that's your game and you're like, I just want some really cool skins, you could, you know, buy that and only have that. And it's legit. It's an incredible skin.
They took the dragon lore thing from Counter-Strike and they took it to the next level.
They really did, yeah.
I see your dragon lore and I give you dragon inserting magazine into something skin.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's cool.
All right. I'll look up the dragon, the Valorant dragon skin, man. Are they trying to create a gray market for that so you can sell your skins?
I don't think so. I hope not. God, I hope not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they don't have to try and create a gray market. They just have to create a system in which you can trade skins to other people via a code, and then they'll be like, we didn't create a gray market, we just thought we're allowing you to transfer skins via a code thing that you can also
make them. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, I know some people that made so much money promoting that stuff, and I was just like, man, if only I could just throw my morals out the window for a second. It's just sitting right there, Matt,
right there, just for the taking.
Bags of gold coins.
not even U.S. currency, just gold.
Just gold. Hey, man, that's the people invest in gold now. Do you own any gold?
No.
I know you're an investor. I thought you would have invested in gold.
I don't believe I've got any investments in gold. No.
Okay.
Unless I just accidentally one day just, you know, drunkenly, because you know me. invested in gold.
Just come home with bars of gold. Check out what I bought. That actually would not be a bad investment.
You know what expensive a bar of gold is?
I mean, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's an
well, actually, I don't know what, like an ingot, whatever, those things that they stack up at the...
the ingots. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are probably like $1 million or something.
Like 2.5 million, something stupid. I don't know actually how much it is, but it's a lot of money.
It is a lot, yeah. No, gold's a solid investment from what I hear. I have not bought any gold, though. But I have seen what you've been playing this week, and I think we've been playing some of the same games, Matt.
Dude, this week's been fun.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying all the games. Would you like to talk about Gray Zone Warfare, level
I
cap?
Would, man. It's the highlight of the week, let's be honest. It's pretty darn cool.
It is neat.
Yeah. So, your word's not mine. It's a Tarkov killer from what you said. And no,
that's not what I said.
I'm just kidding. We've been joking about that, but it's the new extraction shooter. It's set on a jungle island. I think it's based on, I forgot what part of the world it's based on, but apparently
Southeast Asia, I think.
Yeah. And people from there are saying that it looks incredibly authentic and super realistic. They're doing it in Unreal Engine 5. The graphics are on par with the best looking games you've seen, but it's also a multiplayer milsim shooter. It's just doing a lot of firsts for that genre, and it looks incredible. They built their own foliage system. Everything's green. Everything blends into the jungle. I shudder to think how hardcore this game's going to get when PvP gets real, because you can just sit in a bush. There's no time limit. You just sit in a bush, snipe somebody crossing a rice field.
So I have to ask, did you actually encounter any PvP at all when you played?
We did, but we had to go out for it. We had to go hunting for it. Like, it took a while. So if you've never played the game, which should be 99.9999% of people listening, because I think it was an influencer-only play test
you
or
had to
press.
You had to get invited for it.
Yeah, limited keys that they sent out. But there's no vehicles in it, and it's like a 48 by 48 kilometer map or something.
It's humongous.
Huge, massive. Makes some PUBG maps look small, you know? And you go out on foot, and you can have a helicopter deliver you to an LZ, but the only LZs they give you at the start of the game are right next to your main city area that's closest to your base's location. And if you want to get further than that, you just got to hoof it. And sometimes it's 5 kilometers, 8 kilometers away.
You'll be spending like 10 plus minutes to get to your next destination on foot.
But you will be finding LZs along the way landing zones for helicopters. And once you discover an LZ, you can use that as sort of I'd call it a fast travel to get back to base, but it's not really fast. It's like World of Warcraft when you get on those griffins and you ride around the world. It could take a good 3 to 4 minutes to get back to base on these things, which is, it's cool. It adds a sense of scale. And so it adds this extra element of like, hey, we're going to head out far on this mission. So pack some gear. You're going to need some food and water to stay alive for a while. And this is not going to be just like a go out there, hang out for a bit, come back. It's like, get ready to go on a mission with your friends. And it feels like that. It's cool. It felt like Lord of the Rings, but in a milsim situation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. My first experience with PvP, my very first experience was, mm-hmm. I was just going to my starter village. So there's three different bases. You got three factions and it forms a triangle. And so I was going to my safe base. So it kind of, the way that the game is designed is that the early quest have you just go into your beginning village, and it's a lot of easy enemies to fight. And for the most part, you're not going to find any PvP because it takes not only so long to get there, but they're also in their village doing the exact same thing. So it kind of eases people in. And then when you start to go to the spokes around the side, that's when you start to have some overlap with the other players, and that PvP can kind of happen organically. But for me, it's only streamers and their friends that they invited.
Yeah.
Apparently one guy decided, hey, I'm going to camp their LZ. Mm-hmm. And so this actually goes to a problem I have with the game.
Oh my God.
Is the helicopters will drop you off. You'll be stuck in an animation. You cannot shoot your weapon while you're on the helicopter, or even a couple of seconds while you're like standing there. And he just shot me in the chest and my character just ceased to exist. And I was like, oh, that's a problem. That's a really big problem.
Oh my God. From before even playing this game, maybe you and I were both invited to some sort of like little dev stream thing. They've been streaming some behind the scenes stuff to let people know how the game's going to work and play. They described the LZ system in which you land on an LZ location with your helicopter. The very first thought that came into my head, along with everybody else who has ever played an extraction shooter and knows all the cheesy mechanics, is, well, what's going to stop people from camping an LZ? And mind you, these chopper LZs are not in a nice covered area. They're in the middle of a parking lot or a rice field or something in which you have to run 100 meters before you're behind any bit of cover.
Anything.
Yeah.
Any cover.
So anybody could just sit on the edge of that field with whatever gun they want. And it's going to take you 30 seconds to locate them by the time you know, you're dead long before.
Oh, there's no way you're coming out of that at all.
So I was just sort of wondering, like, what is the plan for the? I thought that they were going to set it up so that maybe you could select an LZ within a certain area in the chopper. As long as it was clear, the chopper could set down. And when you came to call a chopper, maybe you would throw a smoke grenade somewhere. And as long as it was a big enough region, the chopper.
That idea of being able to call it within a certain area so that you can kind of dictate. So that way they can't literally just sit there and wait. Like, there's videos of people literally at the LZ walking around, and then they like drops the person off and they're standing right in front of them, looking in the eyes and just shooting them. And there's nothing they can do. Like, you literally cannot retaliate.
It is super weird that the most obvious exploit does not seem to have any sort of thought about how to counter it.
So the one concerning thing is apparently a streamer asked the developers, like, hey, you should probably try to maybe do something about this. And their response to that was, you can just run there instead. I'm like, think that's a solution to your, because like we were just talking about, this map is humongous.
Yeah.
And the idea of having to spend 15 minutes or more to get to some of these points of interest, especially after you got just taken out, that's miserable. That's not a solution to the problem. That's literally just a cop out.
Also, if you're like, I'm going to go kill the guys camping in LZ. Well, if you look around in LZ, it's just jungle. They're going to kill you before you kill them. Because if they're sitting in a bush, you will not see
just
them.
Waiting.
You're just not going to see them. There's an entire cornfield, rice paddies, whatever's going on. They could be in any area of it. I was playing and this dude kind of jokingly backed into a field of corn, like Field of Dreams style, and just disappeared. Literally ran after him and couldn't find him. I was like, oh, he's gone forever. I'll never find this guy. And it's super cool that you can do that because they're really going for that visually authentic approach. But this, the whole LZ concept for the game is both the coolest and the coolest new addition, I think, to this concept of a game. But also they didn't think of how it was going to be exploited, which is just like, I mean, this is the stuff I would think about when you're writing down the idea for the game the very first time. You're like, what if we had helicopters land people? And then the other guy goes, what if somebody camps the LZs? Now you have the discussion
It won't be a problem.
Well, because this is a large dev team. It's like 80-something people. It's very good-looking, impressive tech that should impress a lot of people. I hope they have a really good solution to this because to me, this game was supposed to be the fix to extraction camping that Tarkov has, right? It's this cool concept, and it's like, no, it's just going to create the exact same situation.
Legitimately, if they release it in early access to everyone and they haven't done something about it, I think people are going to be incredibly frustrated by it because... Yeah. This is like content creators where, for the most part, I feel like most of them are pretty cordial because you've got, you know, they're like, you know, comrades and coworkers. And so I feel like most are not going to try to do that, you know, camping in LZ. But I feel like the general public, when everyone's around, it's going to become a corrupt problem.
And most of us weren't playing in full servers. So
true. Yeah. Most general of it, yeah, it was like 8v8v8 when it's 16v16v16. So,
and think about how easy it would be to grab loot too. Cause I mean, somebody's just coming in with all their best gear and you're just like, bam, 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 dead. Cool. Yeah. I get all that loot. Oh, you know what? Hey, we're on an LZ. I'll just take that back to my base now. Easy peasy. Yep. It's a huge oversight, but I do want to say, like, as much as we're bagging on the things that are not good about the game, it is incredibly impressive in most other regards.
Well, because I transitioned from... So I was going to an LZ and I got dropped off and then I ran around a little bit. And then I heard shots. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, it's me. It's me. I'm friendly. And then I checked my map and I was like, that's not a friendly. That's an enemy nearby. So I think he wasn't necessarily trying to camp. I think because... So... Took him out, and then 30 seconds later, another helicopter drops. I'm like, oh, thank goodness, we have reinforcements. It's another enemy! So another enemy gets dropped off. So I think what he thought was I was his buddy about to land, and that's why he didn't take the shot and he immediately dropped me as soon as I got, you know, entered the LZ.
The friend versus foe identification is terrible in the game because everybody looks the same, pretty much.
So I had this great engagement where I'm now dueling this other guy that lands. And it's cool because he tried to hide in a bush. And I knew he was in the bush because the bush does like the Macarena when you're inside of it. It jiggles all over the place. And so I was able to loop around, get into a nice spot. And I just waited. I was like, I'm not moving because I didn't have a grenade to like flush him out or anything. And then as soon as he tried to creep away, I saw the bush move and just blasted him. And it was very, very satisfying. So... My PvP experience was very positive, other than the guy camping. And I don't think those guys were camping either, but other than that, it was fun.
There's what I like so much about how they're kind of elevating the visual triggers and little things that happen in the game that make it feel more immersive are the bush. It's funny to talk about bush physics, but when you see it in the game, you're like, a bullet passing through a bush will also shake it. So if you're having a firefight, you can trace the lines of bullets or where they're coming from based on the foliage moving, which is freaking cool.
Like, it's wild.
There's nice little ways now to give away your position visually. The shadow rendering at distance is incredible. So a big problem with games that are heavy on foliage is that foliage casts a lot of shadows. Shadows are very expensive in video games. The way developers get around this is they cull the shadow rendering at distance. So you lose that shadow detail at distance, and sometimes they can fake it with other methods at distance, but it's usually not as good. So if you're crawling through grass and bushes in PUBG a kilometer away...
Yeah, I was going to say PUBG early days, that reminds me. I'm in a field, they can't see me, blam!
Yeah. They just see you on a polygon out there, you know, like, who's this guy in a green triangle? This game it looks almost identical. It looks incredible. So you could be camping in a bush at a kilometer away and somebody could look right at you and maybe not see you, which is cool and terrifying. It's great for the people who really want that more authentic experience and to look at their environment in the shadows and employ real world tactics like staying in the shadows, not silhouetting yourself against certain backgrounds or backdrops to yourself. That all applies in this game and it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's really neat. All the graphics are incredible.
The foundation for the game, I think, is on the right track. I think they've got a pretty solid base. There's some rickety parts here and there, but they can resolve that. From the sounds of it, they've got, like, there's going to be 70% more game coming. So they've got a lot in store. I'm just hoping a couple of things. It doesn't get bogged down over 10 years of development, and they can actually, you know, have this come out at a reasonable pace, and they can solve the problems that are already very obvious in the game quickly.
What did you think about like loot capacity in the game?
There's nothing to really loot. Loot game is probably one of the weaker parts, and that's what I'm assuming is going to be something that they'll kind of flesh out more, because there's like everything you can pick up, anything, which is cool, but
yeah, you can fit like two things in your inventory before you're at capacity. And if you're carrying all the medical supplies that you would need to survive a bad firefight,
it's taken up like half.
Yeah, or more. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And then you have to do weird crap to make space. Like, I'm only going to carry 3 magazines and the rest will be loose ammo that I have to manually load because that will take up less inventory space. There's all this weird jank. And then you find a cool gun. You're like, well, I got to sacrifice something. You know, yep. I kept throwing good weapons on the ground because I was like, well, I want to try this. Oh, I can't take any of this stuff back. It just felt like there were part of the game is just going for this hyper realistic approach, which is like, yeah, you can't carry 4 assault rifles. I mean, you could carry 4 assault rifles on your back, but it would suck. And so they're just limiting you and saying you can't do any of that. So you go out on these massive expeditions and you can pick up like 3 things, which feels like a major oversight to probably one of the more rewarding gameplay loops, which is going way out and getting cool stuff, right?
I think that's going to be the thing, one of the things they're going to really add on to, because you're right. They're right now that you have quests and you can do those quests and they can be quite challenging. There's harder enemies, like the beginning village. You start off with like your tier 1, which they miss all the time. They have like horrible weapons, and then you go to tier 2, tier 3, and they get progressively harder for the enemies. And like those spots are fun, but also there's nothing really there to get. So there's no real incentive to like do those things other than just for the sake of doing it, which is fun in its own right. But I do think they're going to need to have in some, you know, rewards, incentives. So you go there and maybe there's like a big stash, which has maybe some items that are really valuable. So you can go back to your base and sell them so you can buy, you know, specific loot, or it just has really rare items that you can then put onto your character that will buff them in some capacity, a really good helmet, a good vest. But right now it is very bare bones in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very curious about, did you go into the mystery zone in the center yet?
No, I hear you just die.
That's what I heard. Well, I heard a very vague message from like a dev, which was like, oh, you can try it, but you're going to die. And I was like,
yeah, Tomographic said that you go there and you just die of radiation.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I assume you need to get radiation equipment at some point, and then maybe you can go there. But, I have a lot of questions about what their end game is supposed to be for it. Like, the world building is so cool looking, and it's to see it held back by just basic game design stuff where you're like, hey, that's not even the hard part of this game. Like, that's the easy part, is to make sure people don't get spawn camped at LZs and have enough inventory space to have fun looting things. They've solved the hard problems. They haven't solved the easy problems. It's kind of backwards, which is interesting.
So I have faith, because apparently this has been developed in a year. And if this is a year's, yeah, that's what
one year.
That's bullshit. What I heard from someone. Yeah. Which is surprising if that's actually true. But even if it's 2 years, they've got a good foundation. And I think if they, as long as they keep trudging ahead and they make good decisions, this could be a fun game, not Tarkov. I don't think it's going to be a Tarkov 2.0 or anything, but I think it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to whatever updates they do on it. I did have a lot of fun. Also, their voice comms sound great. I don't know if you're testing that out.
They also have a pretty unique mechanic where you can only talk for so long. And so if you just keep spamming voice comms, it will just cut you. It'll just cut you off.
Yeah. I think that's great for randoms, especially annoying randoms. But yeah, for anyone who's like in a maid party, you'll just hop on Discord and problem solved.
More games need to adopt what BattleBit did, where if there is someone talking and you want to, you just hit F1 and just mutes them.
Yeah, the hotkey mute was fantastic in BattleBit because they're just like, oh, that guy's annoying. He's muted instantly. I don't have to open a menu. I don't have to click on something.
So it's just ingenious.
Yeah. leave it to like a 3-man dev team to innovate first person shooters, you know? Yeah.
Especially for a game that has a hundred, like what, like 256 people, like trying to go through like the list of everyone to try to see who was the person who was talking and then like mute the manual. No way.
Yeah,
what they did was really smart.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to see where Gray Zone Warfare goes. I think it also it's gonna need some more maps too. As big as the map is, it's mostly rice fields and walking through nothing. Well,
I think that would be solved with more points of interest. I don't think they necessarily need a new map, just more points of interest.
Yeah,
especially if they get the middle area in, and then that's like true end game, and then that's where like everyone goes for PvP or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it'll work out. I think one map for now is fine.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, the level of variety so far, it's fun, it's cool, but you can see I've only played it for 4 or 5 hours, and I can already see I'm like, okay, so that's mostly what you do. Like, we've kind of seen the extent of most combat. Really, it does feel a little weird too, having such a I like that you're forced to walk in the game. I do like it, but it does feel weird that there's vehicles everywhere. And you're just like
cars, and
I guess we'll huff it, guys. It's only 8 kilometers and there's like a bicycle right next to you. Just like, I could ride that.
I don't know how they'd be able to implement that without making it feel really weird though.
Yeah, I think they kind of need to I would almost just appreciate some sort of visual update where the cars look, you know, they don't have wheels on or they're run down or broken or something. That way I'm not just like, how about we just take all of these perfectly good cars to our destination? That would make sense.
Yeah.
we're running exhausted with 60 pounds of gear on our back. But, you know, it does look cool. I think people should, I'll hype it up. I think it's worthy of some attention and people getting excited over, because
keep your eye on it.
Some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you should buy it at the beginning, because of the helicopter stuff, but.
Oh yeah. 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 No, I mean,
give it a minute and see where they go with it.
What do you think about the optic rendering in it?
Terrible.
Yeah. Okay, good. There was a comment in one of my video on it saying like, I think the optic rendering is like the best I've ever seen. And I'm just like, have you ever looked down the sights of a gun IRL? Like, this is terrible. It's just miserable.
It's tiny, and like, especially, and this also gets to another thing is I know your frame rate was good. Right.
Yeah.
My frame rate wasn't fantastic. Apparently, if you have a 40, like 90, you have the 40 series card.
I had the frame gen on.
Right. I didn't. And my friend who has a 2070, he was getting 30 FPS, 37 FPS, like absolutely miserable, like unplayable FPS kind of experience.
Yeah.
So it seems like the game is going to run really well if you have a nice graphics card, if it's going to be using that new tech and it does it well. But if you have, I have a 3080 Ti and I wasn't getting the best frame rate. It was playable and it was fine. But one thing I noticed is that as soon as I had like a higher optic and it was double rendering, it was like, forget about it. For like 45 FPS, like this isn't working very well.
They need a bunch of optimization with it. And because the visuals in the game are so kind of fuzzy at range, you know, you like ADS with a red dot and you're like, is this aiming down sights? I can't see anything, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of forced into the ACOG realm of at least a 4X type scope. And then the scope lowers your frame rate and it's this tiny little circle about that big on your screen. It's like,
it's tiny.
It's miniature. You look at any other modern FPS and they're like just so much closer to what you would expect, and also closer to reality for a game that's taking so many things so realistically. I don't know why the optics looks like such garbage. It's not realism. So I don't know what it is, but hopefully they can get that dialed in and looking and performing a lot better. Cause that's my other pet peeve with it.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very good foundation. As you said, all they got to do is fix about 10 fairly glaring points and then they'll have a solid game. It's doable. It's
and then still, add the 70% that they plan on adding. That too.
And then add all that cool new content, baby. Woo.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny how excited people get about content that doesn't exist yet. You know, I feel like that's one of the best hype factors for any game. Speaking of which.
Potential.
Star Citizen, baby. Woo, oh, are you excited God. About all that
Level
amazing?
Cam, you have a problem.
I don't. I haven't played Star Citizen since. Well, I played it in their latest.
No, it's
patch
it's
thing.
Not. It's not the fact that you're playing it. It's the fact that you're just. You just. You're all in on the hype. You're all in that potential.
No, fine. I'm gonna trash talk them today. I'm gonna.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, kind of trash talk them. They remember all those cool features I was talking about coming in patch 3.23. Mm-hmm. Gonna be the biggest patch the game's ever seen. XYZ. Yep, yep. They just cut a bunch of features from it, which
I'm not surprised.
I saw coming. You saw coming. Everybody saw coming. They weren't testing persistent hangars or any of their new cargo missions or cargo elevators or the item banks and all that stuff. And it just sort of seemed like if you're not testing it now and you're trying to get this patch out in like a month, I don't think it's going to happen, guys. And sure enough, they said that, yeah. It's not going to be in 3.23, but or it might be in like a version of 3.23.x, whatever. So a bunch of features are getting cut from it. They've already announced the dates for their next CitizenCon event, the massive Star Citizen fan con thing. I know you haven't missed a single one yet.
No, I've already got my tickets.
Yeah, well, yeah, then you would know that you're going to be part of one of the biggest CitizenCon fan events ever. They've exceeded the ticket sales for last year already, and the event's not till like, I don't know, September or something, like not for a while. So if you think the hype is dying down for Star Citizen, no, it's just growing, man.
Well,
it's
considering how hype the last one was.
Yeah. And they did say they're hyping this one, man. I had a couple devs reach out to me and they're like, you should come to this one.
You should come to this one. Yeah. Well, they might announce like the release date for the single player.
An announcement of an announcement, baby.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, the thing is I had a really good time covering CitizenCon last year with Salty Mike. We just live streamed it and it's the best way to cover it. Yeah, it was the better way to cover it. We didn't miss anything. People there missed stuff, you know, and I'm like, that's how I would prefer to cover it and then not have to fly to a country.
And get sick. I feel like everyone gets sick after one of those conventions.
It's just not ideal for content creators. If I was just a fan with some disposable income and some time on my hands, I'd be more open to going to something like this. But as a content creator, I'm like, it doesn't make any sense to go to
Still exciting though.
Yeah. No, I'm pumped. I still think this year's going to be quite exciting. And that next patch that's coming out is a big one, man. Vulcan DLSS server crash recovery, it's replication layer switching stuff. It's getting cool. There's animals that can eat you now, Matt. It's good stuff.
That's what I was waiting for.
Pterodactyls and I don't even know what the other
ones
are.
They're adding in pterodactyls?
Well, they look like pterodactyls.
Okay,
I don't know.
So they're just big birds. Okay.
Yeah, with that look like pterodactyls. Like yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, just alien pterodactyls, essentially. And then they have like alien hyenas or something. I don't know what to describe the other animals as, but they look cool. Little tiger things. Uh-oh. Internal temp too high on my new camera.
No, and you just disappeared. No.
Well, we're testing out the new cam. Holy shit.
That's not good.
Hang on one sec.
He's becoming Elgato's green now.
All right, good to know that it overheats in however many minutes of recording. Where are we at with the podcast? What are we talking about now, man?
Not Star Citizen. We were going to transition on over to another game called Frostpunk 2.
Oh, yeah. Did that come out? Or in early access or something?
They have a beta. Okay. This is...
Yeah.
This is where things get a little... Frostpunk 1, one of my favorite games for city builders. Very fun. Not a lot of replayability, sadly, to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was hoping was going to be improved in the second one. And so I was really hyped for this. Very excited. But the only way to play the beta is... What would you think? Maybe sign up for it. Maybe they have a, you know, open beta. No.
Pre-order the Gold Deluxe Ultimate Edition, baby.
God damn right. You got to spend more money than just the standard $70.
That was mother flip.
Yeah. $70 to not just play like it's a beta. Mm-hmm. Oh, it really frustrates me at level. So I played that and it is... There are some really cool elements to it. It is less of a city builder this time and more of a like political faction management where you are still building a city, but there's going to be different factions that pop up.
Yeah.
Like your Ice Bloods and your Machinists and things like that. And they all want different things. And you want to make sure that they aren't like getting upset too much, because if they do, they'll rebel. Or they'll go on strike. And so then that factory that you really need that's producing food for your people no longer does so. And yeah. Now you're screwed because these people are on strike. So you need to kind of balance that. They've also got a cool law system where you have to enact laws, which will have different strengths and weaknesses. And you have to use your influence to try and get different factions to actually vote on it. So there's a lot of like really cool ideas with it. But my biggest issue is that it doesn't feel like the original game. The original game,
which was much more city building, right?
Yeah. And it really felt like you were a part of this city and you were really just trying to survive the elements. This game is years after that one.
Yeah.
You've all kind of established your city and they're kind of used to living in this environment now. Like it's awful.
That's less fun.
Yeah. Well, so there's still like a cold mechanic where people could die because of the cold. So it's still a present thing.
But the first game is like literally about just trying to make it. And this game is like heat. Politics yeah. and stuff. Of
Yeah, it's all about managing your heat and trying to insulate homes and prepare for like there's a big stretch where there's like nothing's going to grow. Everyone's going to die. And that's like the end game, right?
Yeah.
And in this beta, it wasn't the story mode. And they said that there's going to be a lot more coming when the game comes out. But I really didn't feel like I was actually building a city. Like, you do make some decisions. But one thing that was really frustrating is, like, almost all of your resources are finite. And you just run out of them. Like, I built a farm, which is just, it's not an actual farm like you would a conventional. It's, like, inside. They're all greenhouses because they have to be. But you run out of fertile soil. And so you just run out of food.
That's it.
Yeah. So
it's a finite resource city build. I could see them making fun mechanics around that, but it's very non-typical for a city builder where you need to continuously generate stuff.
So you do go, you send out scouts to go and find resources that they can then set up like a base out there, set up a base. There's not like I don't see you building a second base that you're managing. It's just more like a UI thing. We're like, all right, make a railroad, draw the line, and then start shipping coal up, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's a way to get more stuff, but I want a city builder. I don't want all my food to just be gone. And what's annoying is that there's decisions that you make. So for example, when you build a farm, if you put a certain amount of houses around it, those houses get a heat benefit because they share their warmth, right? So I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. You have to really like plan ahead.
I like that kind of stuff. That's fun.
I like that too. But as soon as the farm, to my understanding, ran out of fuel or ran out of soil, all those benefits completely gone. So I was like, so now I just have a worthless husk of a farm here that doesn't provide. I was trying to plan ahead and make sure everything was getting those benefits, and now all those benefits are gone. It's like, oh, that doesn't feel good at all. That feels actually terrible. So I'm not really sure how I feel about Frostpunk. I'm still excited.
That kinda
I want to play it
because
but...
the first game was everybody loved the first game. It was generally universally praised as a fantastic, innovative city builder. And for a sequel for a city builder. Like, people aren't expecting city builders to reinvent the wheel. They usually just want a little bit more of the same with, you know, a cherry on top for the sequel.
Yeah.
Right. You know, if they made a sequel to Anno 1800, which we were talking about last podcast, which I think we both like, I wouldn't want them to change the fundamentals really at all, because I like the fundamentals. I would just, you know, I'd be
something
like,
different. Yeah. Slash more.
Something a little different or more, or look at one of the mechanics that didn't work that well and maybe update it or change it or remove it or something, you know, but don't reinvent the wheel. I
like respect the fact that they're trying to make something that isn't just the same thing, but an updated engine. I like the idea of them trying to mix it up, but man, it feels like a very different experience. It's still a city builder. I'm not trying to, you know, you are still building a city and you're having to manage that city, but it wasn't resonating with me as much. I don't know if it's because my hype was so high and then I played it and I was like, oh.
I personally don't like games that are politic heavy when it comes to managing nations and that kind of thing. Like, it can be fun at times when it's integrated with also controlling an army or building a castle or whatever type game you're playing. But when there's too much of an emphasis on the politics side of things, I feel like I'm just kind of pressing check boxes, you know, and like, I hope I picked the right one.
It did feel like it was more UI focused, which I know is strange to say, because you know, essentially all city builders are essentially just trying to, you know, use your UI to make your city. But it was very UI focused, and that was a problem that I had as well. My chat always gives me a hard time for complaining about UI and UX, but
you could contract out Matt as a UI UX
mainly because I'm just an idiot advisor. And I can't figure out UIs. But there's a moment where, like, there's upgrades. And you have to research upgrades. What I didn't realize is at the very bottom, there's like this very grayed out, there's three tabs. So there was three different options for economy, social, and something else. And I only knew of the one because it just does not make it apparent that it's all the way down at the bottom.
That's
the worst
when you're playing a game forever and you're like, I swear there should be a better way to do this. And then you're like, wait a minute, what? This little gray thing down here was a button the whole time? Yeah, that drives me crazy. Yeah. I mean, so I feel like if you didn't see it, I'm going to call it.
Other people had the same problem. I went onto the subreddit, and the subreddit is also pretty mixed. I don't want to say that this game is bad, because it's not. It's just not what I was expecting. So I just think I just need to do some internal, you know, like coming to terms with this.
I mean,
this,
you
can
not enjoy the game. That's okay. Like, it doesn't have
but
to
I,
be
But I did
bad.
Enjoy it. I did enjoy the parts that were there. It's just not Frostpunk. It's just not the same.
I
just got to come to terms with that. But the subreddit was very mixed, and there were many people that were saying that they did not realize that there was that there was three different tabs down there for your upgrades, because the UI just doesn't really convey that information very well.
Yeah. I went through a similar thing recently with the Homeworld demo that they launched. And because I'm a huge fan of the original Homeworld games. Like, they were my formative RTS games as a kid. You know, they had a huge impact on me. And then I played the third game, the demo of the third game, and was like, oh, like, this is really clunky and awkward. And
yeah.
It feels like it not only did not improve on the original UI, but made it worse in certain ways. And I was just like, man, I was really looking forward to playing this game. And then after playing the demo, I'm like, I don't know what they're doing. Like,
it's no longer on my radar. That's how much I didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably going to play it regardless, because that's how much of a fanboy I am. But I sort of resent that to a degree as well, where I'm like, you guys should have made a better game, because this is a huge IP that people have wanted forever.
Well, they have taken feedback, and they said, I think they either delayed the game or they plan on being like, we're going to be making some significant changes. So at least they are listening to the feedback from the demo, because clearly we weren't the only ones that were struggling with the UI and understanding what was going on, because it wasn't well received.
Yeah, and people hated the mechanics of the freaking what is it called, where you have to activate an ability every time you want your unit to like do something.
I didn't like
good.
That either.
Yeah, and you're like, what? Now I have to like activate a whole bunch of abilities all the time.
Is this StarCraft all of a sudden?
Yeah, like, yeah. You have your APM tax, right, is what they called it. And you're like, I don't want all that crap. It's just busy work. And let me focus on the strategy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I wasn't enjoying that. You know what I am excited about, though? I've got an interview tomorrow with the developer of Falling Frontier, which is essentially
Frontier.
It's kind of like an homage to Homeworld and a bunch. And it's like Homeworld meets the Expanse.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
So I'm really excited to talk to him about that game, because that game has very quickly become the replacement for my Homeworld 3 Void. You know, I'm like, oh man. And like, I know he's a huge Homeworld fan and was largely inspired by Homeworld to make his game. And it looks much easier to control. The UI looks really clean. And I'm just like, oh man, this looks fun. And it takes place in the solar system. And so his factions and stuff are based around different planets. So you'll have like the people who like the Jovians, right? And they like are around Jupiter and do all that stuff. And their ships will look different. And I'm like, oh, this sounds fun. Like, this sounds really cool. I'm already digging it. And if you look at the visuals of his combat demo, like comparing it to Homeworld 3, you're like, this guy's got all this cool, his ships look really purposefully built. They've got all these cool countermeasure systems. The missiles look awesome. And then I look at Homeworld 3 and I'm like, okay, it's just kind of what they did before. And then if you look closely, the thing that was irking me is the shot. Like, I'm noticing stuff now that I'm working on similar systems in games where they're just faking a lot of stuff, where the shots will be fired at an enemy ship. But because it's pretty hard to have a turret properly predict the trajectory of a spaceship moving through space, a lot of the times the shots are going to miss. But you can't design a game so that the shots have to connect every time. Otherwise, they're going to miss a lot more, and it becomes much more difficult to balance out units. So you have to fake it. And so I was watching a lot of the Homeworld combat, and like the ship would die to a shot that misses it, you know? And I'm like, oh, this is, it's nuanced, but it's also, once you see it, it's hard to unsee it. And you're like, that's less pleasing, you know, when the,
yeah, it's like, my ship just died out of nowhere. Yep.
It's kind of old school RTS where they just didn't have the code or the capabilities to really make the physics work properly. So they're just like, you shot him 3 times. And you're like, well, one of those shots actually missed him. They're like, don't worry about it. He's dead. So that was another little hit against Homeworld that I was just like, not like, come on, guys, you're a bigger studio and you're just throwing buckets of money at promoting this game. Back it up on the development side, you know?
I hope that they can get it working, because I was super stoked when I first saw it. I hope Fallen Frontier, because that it looks like it's going to be more focused on like an individual ship that you're managing, not like tons of ships.
No, it's RTS. I think it's RTS.
Oh, it is RTS? Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know how big the fleet battles are. That'll be a good question to ask him in the interview, actually, because I've seen battles of like 3 ships versus 3 ships or something. But yeah, is there going to be like a big ass armada engaging another one? That would be cool.
Hundreds of ships.
Thousands of ships.
Thousands. We will block out the sun with our ships? Sure.
A star? I mean, if you're fighting around the sun, I suppose it could be the sun.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be a lot of ships.
Yeah. I got a little flack in one of my dev logs for saying we made the sun is like the title of the video, because we made a star in it.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's not the sun, it's a star.
It's
and
a I was star. Like,
shut your mouth.
You know what I'm trying to say. The language has done its job.
Yeah, I know. Ugh. It's not as impressive to say we made a star. Like, what, a little point of light in the distance? What are you talking about?
Right, we made a sun.
Yeah. Giant ball of gas.
Have you heard anything from No Rest for the Wicked?
Have I heard anything from them?
Do you know anything about it?
I've seen the gameplay. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it's dope.
Have you played it? Okay, yes. So is it out already?
So it is out as an early access.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is a weird blend of, they're trying to like redefine the genre for ARPGs, so like Diablo and Path of Exile, where it's a lot more like Dark Souls, like top-down Dark Souls, where everything's got like a lot of weight. You're not going to just be spamming abilities.
Yeah.
You have to dodge. So it's essentially like Dark Souls mechanic from a top down, where you're dodging and you're timing your attacks. But you also get ARPG loot from time to time, where you'll get like a really cool sword that has different attacks and animations. Mm-hmm. It will have different stats on it. You can go like a lightning build. I haven't really dived that deep where I'm now getting into like builds yet. But man, the animation quality and just the visceralness of it. Mm. Yeah. And the visuals is incredible.
Yeah.
They really did trailers. A good job.
If you guys are wondering, just check out a trailer for, what's it called again?
It's called No Rest for the Wicked.
No Rest for the Wicked. It is gorgeous. Like that's what caught my attention was just, it looks just fun to like run around in the game. Like not like the fighting looks really cool, but just absorbing the atmosphere just looks incredible.
It's made by the same people who made Ori and the Blind Forest.
Okay.
So they've got a good track record. And what I was not expecting is there's a story with like actual cutscenes in it. Like good cutscenes with like,
so they threw some money into this game.
Yeah, there's money behind it. It's not just the gameplay. It's more indie than maybe some others, but it's got some backing to it. And the characters are interesting so far. I'm very impressed. One critique I do have with it.
Yeah.
Is, did you ever play Divinity Original Sin at all? No, not UI.
No.
Same guys that made Baldur's Gate. Okay, well, back in DS2, Divinity Original Sin 2, there, especially in Act 2, you'd have to run around to all the different areas trying to figure out what is around your level. It's an open world section, but you need to go to places that are your level.
Because you got to level up against mobs that are your level.
Right. If they're one level above you, like, good luck trying to, especially on harder difficulties, you're going to get dunked on. The problem I have with this game is I couldn't find areas that were my level. Either it was quote unquote safe, which is below your level, or dangerous, which is above your level. So I just was in this like weird limbo where I was in an area where it was clearly not for me.
Yeah.
Trying to like, you know, level up, and all the gear I was getting was level like 11 while I was level like 8 or 7. So I couldn't even use this stuff.
Yeah, it seems like you missed a zone or something.
Yeah, but I couldn't find the zone that I missed. So either I'm just really unobservant, but I found two zones that were dangerous. I don't know where the moderate or, you know, where. So that was a bit of a knock that I had. I was able to actually go through the dangerous section and beat the boss. And it was long and arduous because I wasn't doing a lot of damage, but I was able to get it done. So that was really fun.
Yeah. But it's less it's less enjoyable when you're like, I shouldn't be here yet. And I didn't want to do this early, but I don't know what else to do. So I'm just going to muscle my way through this and just suffer.
Pretty much. It's fun. I was watching someone else. They had like a really cool build where they were just like flinging weapons around and taking out bosses way faster than I was. So like your build is going to matter and it is going to have an impact there. Yeah. Just,
how does
really
it compare
cool.
to like the combat of say Hades or something, which is very much a kind of dodging reaction type game?
Way weightier. So Hades is fantastic too, but Hades I feel like is more arcadey in the sense that it's, you are dodging and everything, but that's a good question. I would say that everything just has significantly more weight. You really have to think about your attacks, especially when you're using a heavy weapon.
The attack timing and stuff is a bit longer. You kind of commit to the attack sequences in this.
Yeah,
so
Hades is more of like spamming abilities and just like throwing weapon over and over and over and over again. And this is more of I have to wait for the opening to get an attack off if I have a heavier weapon.
I like that. Yeah, that sounds more Dark Souls-y as well.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
The twist is, though, if that you do die, everything doesn't respawn. It's really interesting. I don't know if it's completely... It's not completely got roguelike, where the areas
are... Is it multiplayer?
It will become co-op, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And what's cool is you're going to build up, like, a village. And you'll be, like, upgrading the different areas. You can have, like, your own little house that you can buy. And there'll be like scaffolding that you can fix. And so the city, from the sounds of it, will actually kind of like grow with you and look cooler. And I love that. Yeah. I know it gets a little cliche, but I love when the game progresses along with you, at least with the city.
For sure.
And you're going to be helping that. But right now it takes a lot of resources. And so it feels like this is a mechanic that is maybe designed for when you have co-op, because you contribute resources to it. And if it's just you, it's like, boy, this is taking a long time to get these upgrades.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But if you had a couple of buddies that were helping you.
That could be a pretty cool co-op thing to do, is like work together to make your village massive. And it provides you benefits and stuff when you build the village.
Yeah, you could get like, yep.
Sick. It sounds good. I'm going to, I do want to check that one out because I've been kind of excited for the next Path of Exiles game, and also, and any, honestly, any good action RPG. So I'll check this one out. I haven't checked out the latest Diablo updates, but I hear they're doing some major revamps to it to try.
I heard that they're finally going to revamp their itemization. And once they do that, maybe I'll finally jump back in. But like their items were so bad.
Yeah.
And uninteresting.
Yeah.
Oh, and real quick, the game is currently mixed right now on Steam. And I think that was because...
Which one?
No Rest for the Wicked.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's because of... There's some like slowdown every once in a while in frame rate when you get into a new zone, which is a little unfortunate. Yeah. And the game, apparently day one, was unbelievably difficult because of their repair system.
Oh,
where
no.
if you like died... Like your weapons would just degrade on you really quickly. It's like,
Wait, so is it early access or beta? What is it?
It is early access.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think it deserves the mixed. I think it's way better than mixed.
Yeah.
But, you know, if people are struggling and they're not having fun, then that's completely valid. But
action
yeah, early
RPG
on, it's tough.
As early access sounds very tough because action RPGs are so dependent on everything being very well balanced and tweaked. Otherwise, the whole game feels off. So, yeah, I could see that being a tough way to do it. But it sucks that early access has become almost the staple for a lot of studios now. There really is... too much value in it because you almost get a double promotion. You get the, hey, our game's going into early access
and then
1.0 update for the game. It's out of early access. And then you kind of get a pass as a developer for things not working quite as well during early access. Cause you're like, well, it's early access, guys. We're going to fix that. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of this, it makes a lot of sense for devs, plus that you get the sales money right away, especially if you're running out of funds to build your game and you're like, our concept is great, but we need the money to finish the concept. Let's launch it into early access. I know no devs want to launch a game that way, but the industry's almost forced them to in many regards, I feel.
I agree. I do think it's become a double-edged sword, though, because first impressions matter a lot. And while you do get that double dip in promotion, you know, when you're launching to, you know, 1.0 and at the original release, I think that a lot of people are getting pretty tired of early access games. They're like, cool, good luck, I wish you all the best, but I'm not going to touch this until it gets 1.0 because like you may never finish. We've been burned so many times, and I think some people, maybe not everybody, is getting a little bit more jaded to the early access.
You really got to get your early access game to like a almost complete state, otherwise it's going to get bashed, you know. So it's really just become, it's almost become an excuse for like a slightly unfinished game at launch, right? So it's like, hey, the game's done-ish, but we probably need another 6 months of polish. Why don't we just launch it into early access? And now we have an excuse for why there's bugs and little things that don't quite work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But I'm glad that you're enjoying it. I do want to check it out. It was a good sales pitch, and I'll for sure take a look at it. I'm a huge action RPG fan. There's just something. I mean, Hades became one of my favorite games. Hades 2, is that still coming out this year? I think it's supposed to come out
soon.
Yeah,
they just had a... It might still be going on, but there is a like closed beta going on, and then there'll be early access, I'm assuming, pretty closely after this.
Yeah. I was watching Hades 1 speedruns. I never watch speedruns, but there's a dude doing them, and I was just like mesmerized by his skill. It was fun.
I can only imagine how crazy they are.
Yeah, it's nuts. Well, they have to get the right drops too, you know.
So some RNG to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can do it with a bunch, but he's sort of like, if you got the perfect drop combo and then had a perfect, flawless run, you could, you know, get the world record or something in Hades speedrun. But yeah, Hades is fun to watch. I really enjoyed that as a roguelike. And
it was a great game.
Yeah. I mean, it made me like roguelikes to a degree because I wasn't super on board with the whole concept. And then I played Hades and was like, okay, I get it. These are fun. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid. It's solid.
Solid.
Solid. So I'm still working my way through Red Rising.
Okay.
I like it. It's kind of a little Hunger Games, but
yes, that's the one thing I'm always a little hesitant because like it is a little Hunger Gamesy. Towards the middle. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's because it's just
it works though. I'm enjoying that part of the book a lot. It's like it's also not as kind of teen.
It's
not as teen oriented with the Hunger Gamesy part.
Right.
You're not like, oh, I like this girl and I hope she notices me type crap. You know, it's like life or death, like politics and just like horror, basically.
It's like the Hunger Games, but if everyone was like really smart and brutal and they were trying to survive and people could and will die. I guess people died in Hunger Games as well, but it kind of has a YA feel to it.
Yeah, Hunger Games was like last person alive.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
This is not that, but there's some elements.
Yeah, but you know how it has that YA young adult kind of sheen to it in the Hunger Games where it's like people are dying, but it's in a more sterilized environment. And then in this one, there's certain deaths and people doing certain things. You're like, that's not good.
Yeah, it gets brutal. I'm liking it because the future that they're building is very dystopian. You're finding on many different levels. Like, it's interesting because it's sort of copying some of the ideas from Brave New World and the idea of these rigidly classed-based societies. But and you assume that the lowest class are the worst, but there's some pretty crazy crap that happens in the higher up classes too. They're not just like, all right, cool, life is just paradise. No,
golds are psychopaths. Like, they're nuts.
Yeah. And the political sphere of it all too is just like to the nth degree. It's very well written. I'm enjoying it, and hopefully I'll finish it soon.
The first book I think sets. Because it is kind of Hunger Gamesy, and I know some people get turned off by that. But the next books after that, I just finished off Lightbringer, which is the most recent book. I just finished it like 2 days ago.
Yeah,
it's goddamn, it's freaking incredible. I absolutely loved the last three books, which are 10 years after the original trilogy. Yeah. There's going to be one more. It's called Red God.
Yeah.
Which is just the coolest goddamn Red God.
He's not holding back, man. He's just like, Well, I'm excited about it because it's sort of the book's very much, at least the first book is giving you the idea that it's going to evolve into interstellar with inner solar system. Is that what that means? I forget.
Interplanetary? I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever it's called.
Like solar system level, fleet command level, spaceship, planetary combat. And I'm like, yes. So it is in the Hunger Games part right now, but they're painting the picture of where it's going to. And I'm excited.
I mean, the second to last book is literally combat on a global scale and what that would look like and how many people, like, we're talking unbelievable amounts of just chaos.
Given what has happened in this book so far, they show that there doesn't seem to be much consideration for any class's life other than their own. And even then, the golds are killing golds. Like, they don't care that much. So... yeah, and the golds are sort of the top of the food chain. So if the golds kill golds, I mean, they'll just wipe out, you know, entire sections of lower classes and not even think about it. They'll sleep like a baby that night, you know?
It's one of my favorite series, and this last book is just completely solidified. It's bonkers, incredible. Highly recommend it. I don't recommend it to everyone anymore. The first three books I recommend to almost anyone, except for a child, you know, of course, but...
well, what child's going to read that book and understand it?
I don't know. I got, you know, whatever. but the next three, and then four, I can't recommend to everyone because it gets so unbelievably gruesome at times where I'm like, I'm even a little squeamish by what's happening in this book.
Yeah.
But
I'm excited.
Still,
I'm excited like to see what that is, Matt.
Well, you'll find out.
Oh man, I started Dune 2.
Oh, Dune I haven't Part seen 2. It yet.
Okay. I won't give away any spoilers. I didn't finish it because it was a late night and my wife was getting tired. And I was like, all right, we'll pause and we'll finish the second half later. But let me just say this. I'm only halfway through it. The first movie we've talked about a little bit here. And I said I liked it, but I wasn't overly impressed. I thought it just kind of lacked a little bit of personality to it. And honestly, not too much happened in the first
movie.
Not a lot happens.
It's a lot of setup.
Second movie, halfway through, I'm in love, dude. It is.
That's what everyone's been saying.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's fun. It's just the whole, it hasn't slowed down at all. It's like fantastic pace. Everything's moving along. Every 10 minutes, something crazy happens where you're just like, what? Oh my God, that was epic.
It feels good. Like the end of the original, like the Dune 1, Part 1. There's like that moment where they get to like the desert and it really slows down. And it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, this is going to be the launch pad for the next movie. And it sounds like it is the launch pad and they just take off.
Yeah, it starts from a running pace, essentially. And, oh, man, they're just building it out so well. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, Denis Villeneuve, whatever your name is, like... You're doing a really good job. I like all your other movies. It's good stuff, man. And the fact now that they've picked up for another movie after this,
Dune Messiah was picked back up. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really exciting because I know Dune fans are huge into the next books too in the series because the story is apparently super deep and super interesting and like the
apparently it's very weird too.
Yes. Yes. Like I haven't read the later books, but I'm going to want to, but apparently the Bene Gesserit are like they sort of came to being to combat like basically the entire human race being enslaved by a machine race at some point, thousands of years ago. It's part of why their tech is kind of low tech to a degree. You know what I mean?
I think they don't. Yeah. It's a lot like Warhammer 40K where they don't have AI because there was a big AI like war, robot war. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's similar to that, or rather, Warhammer would be similar to
Dune. And that's
why
they use spice, and they like have human computers, where it's just a dude like calculating stuff. Yeah, that's why they have
that. And the Bene Gesserits are like, you know, they're planning out humanity's future like 1,000 years in advance and like orchestrating all this crazy crap. And you're like, oh, that's super cool. Super interesting, and the movie's addressing a few things that the book didn't as much, and I think it's... When you watch it, you'll get there, and I'd be curious to hear what you think about it, but they're sort of adding some... I think they're creating characters that seem a little bit more intelligent, because sometimes the book, or you oversee some things in the book where it can seem like people are just mindless or dogmatic or whatever, mm-hmm. and in the movie, they're sort of giving them a little bit more information, and it makes them seem
more three-dimensional.
Yeah, it makes them seem a little more intelligent. And I'm like, yeah, I actually like the changes that they're making. You know, like it's nice. Cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, I'm down with it. Dune 2, I will finish it. You can go watch it now, Matt. It's streaming now.
Is it on a platform? Do you have to buy it?
You can rent it.
Okay.
You can rent it, yeah. I know you're a cheapo, but you should.
I am a cheap, frugal man. It's true.
Just spend some of that Twitch money, man. Spend some of the thousands of dollars you make from this podcast, Matt.
Yes, the thousands of dollars we're making on this podcast. Yeah.
Spend some of that. Support us on Patreon. Yeah, we did find out, unfortunately, that the whole wife ordering thing is not legal anymore. So we're going to have to find a backup plan for you, Matt. But I'm figure it out, okay?
Glad to hear it.
Somewhere out there, we should be able to exchange money to get you a girlfriend and or wife. But there's got to be a legal way to do it.
I think that's called courting and you know, going on dates and spending money to, you know, get to know someone.
I want something with, you know, a contract involved just to make sure the money, you know, like we get a return on investment. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. I don't think that's how relationships usually work, but, you know.
Marital contract, you know,
it's true, those do exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. You lose half your stuff, you get divorced. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Where are we going now?
I didn't really do much else. I mean, I played three fun games this week and they were great.
Yeah. Are you at all excited for X Defiant had another play session? I assume you didn't play it this week.
I did not. I thought about it and I thought it was, I was going to play it yesterday because I was like, oh, they'll have like a beta weekend. It was only for like 2 days and it wasn't on it wasn't on Sunday. So I didn't have a chance. I'm still looking forward to it, but at the same time, I wasn't like, you know, jumping for joy to go and play because
it's free.
Like,
Call
when
of
is
Duty.
This coming out? Like when, I've already done like three betas when they always usually play relatively the same. It's like, so what are you adding? What's going on?
I'm sort of tentatively watching it as well. Cause it is a competent little kind of classic TDM style game. It is a Ubisoft title and it is free to play, which means the microtransactions are going to be shoved up your butt basically the whole time. And you're just going to be like, so I'm worried about that to a degree. Also, Ubisoft is taking forever on this, kind of, right?
Yep. It's taken a long time.
And Ubisoft is a big company, and when they do a big project, that's hundreds of people. This is not costing a small amount of money. So now I'm worried that they're really going to try and over-monetize X Defiant, where X Defiant probably should have been a smaller project to a degree. And I'm just kind of concerned about the amount of time it's taking to make it because it's just free COD essentially. And I don't, it's not a bad idea, but it might be a bad idea at the price point that Ubisoft is spending on it. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with it. I didn't play the latest one either. So I was going to see if you did to get any feedback on what's improved or worse.
Okay. I was trying to Google here. When was it first announced? Because I feel like it's been in development for only 2 years ago was the worldwide reveal trailer. But I feel like it's been in development way longer than that. Obviously, it would have, but yeah, it's been cooking for a minute.
Yeah, it is still. It's interesting because it really is just COD TDM to a degree. And you're like, well, you're making a game that at this point is very old now. So you're coming out with a new version. And the only real angle is slight cosmetic engine choice changes. And then it's free. So we'll see if that formula is enough to make it interesting. I mean, Halo went free to play and there's not that many people playing Halo. So,
yeah.
We'll see. I hear people are liking what Microsoft has been doing lately, I hear, with Halo multiplayer, but it still hasn't picked back up in the way that you might expect
IP.
Yeah. But I do like that they continue to work on those projects. And I think Halo Forge is a really cool concept and more games need it. It'd be cool if Battlefield had a Halo Forge type component. Oh, wouldn't it?
You call it like, I don't know, like a Battlefield Portal or something.
Yeah, like a portal to other genre areas of Battlefield. That'd be sick. It was a good idea. It really was.
Just wasn't executed and wasn't that it had no follow through.
Yeah. And all the, you know what it's like? It reminds me of how anybody could see the LZ problems with Gray Zone Warfare coming a mile away, right? Before you ever played the game, you could be like, well, people are going to do this. And then the game comes out and people do that. The exact same thing was pointed out with Battlefield Portal. We're like, people are just going to make servers to XP grind. And your rank's not going to matter anymore. And they're just going to use it to get all the highest level stuff in the game instantly. And the devs were like, oh, we'll have some sort of thing in place for that. And then the game comes out and people are XP grinding that day. They're like rank 100 or whatever the highest rank was. And you're just like, how does everybody else but the dev team see this coming? You know, and I obviously don't want to speak for all the devs because unfortunately in those types of structures, a lot of people on the lower rungs know exactly what's about to happen, and they're like sending emails up the chain, and the higher ups
are like, this is going to be a problem, right? No, it'll be fine. It'll be okay.
Yeah. But apparently they've completely restructured DICE, with Rebecca Kutaz, I think is the new manager. So we'll see if the restructuring works for the next game.
I hope so.
In 2025, maybe? I think that's when the holiday 2025. No, we're definitely not. But there might be like some hypening or something, and also the whole multi-universe, whatever they're doing. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a chunk of something. Who knows? All right. You want to wrap up the pod there?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, people. Thank you so much for dropping by and hanging out. If you want to support the podcast further, check us out on Patreon. Otherwise, you can also subscribe to the podcast playlist and you'll be notified, and subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you might be listening on. We should be on all the main ones. And now Matt has got some... Oh yeah, one of the other benefits is that you'll get to join us for a little discussion after the podcast live, which we record on Mondays if you become a Patreon member, which we'll be doing in just a second. And I'm excited to talk about, you know, Formula One and your latest girlfriend stuff and all that cool stuff that we talk about post-podcast. But you've got some advice for our peoples?
Yes, my words of wisdom this week is never be afraid to ask for assistance.
It's good.
Thank you.
I got no quip on that one. That's
good.
It's decent. I can't poke any flaw.
Good. I didn't realize this was you, that you actually look forward to trying to poke holes into my advice.
Well, when it's bad advice, I want to make sure our people are, you know, they're not steered the wrong way or can't interpret it wrong, you know?
I'm pretty sure I've never given bad advice. I don't know what you're trying to imply.
Never ask for advice unless you're one of those golds competing for the Primark or whatever they're trying to get.
Yes, of course.
Then you probably want to, you know, play the politics and make your enemies close, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right, people. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch you next time. Peace out.
Bye.